This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we welcome you to another episode of New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, so very much to go over this week, and we will get right into it with some breaking news from Sibel Edmonds and BoilingFrogsPost.com. This story will take a little bit to extrapolate and to crystallize for us, but let's just take the opening paragraph to lay out the story. Boiling Frogs Post has now confirmed the identity of the CIA analyst at the heart of a notorious failure in the run-up to the 9/11 tragedy. Her name is Alfreda Frances Bukowski, and she is the current director of the CIA Jihad Unit. Through three credible sources and documents, we have confirmed Ms. Bukowski's former titles and positions, including her start CIA as an analyst for the Soviet desk, her position as one of the case officers at the CIA's Bin Laden unit, Alex Station, her central role and direct participation in the CIA's rendition, torture, and black site operations, and her current position as director of the CIA's Global Jihad Unit. James, if you can flesh this story out for folks and how it relates to some work being done by some producers and some threats from the CIA about disclosing agents' names.
Absolutely. Well, this is a huge story, and I hope that people have been following it on Boiling Frogs Post, where it has been being covered. But it relates back to an interview that was released last month, but recorded back in 2009 with Richard Clark, who was the head of counterterrorism under Clinton and partially under Bush. And during that time, in the run-up to 9/11, basically he says that he was specifically barred from getting information from the CIA. They specifically did not send him information about al-Hazmi and al-Midhar, two of the alleged 9/11 hijackers who the CIA knew had attended an al-Qaeda summit in Malaysia and then knew that they had visas to enter the U.S. but never told the FBI, never told the White House. They never passed that information on. And in that interview, which made some waves at the time, Clark said he blamed CIA Director George Tenet. He said that they must have deliberately not given him that information. I did a video on that for Boiling Frogs Post. We'll put the link to the related part of, in the video description of this, but that's sort of the background of this story. And part of the story involves two agents at the CIA who were involved in this failure to pass on the information. Not a failure, a deliberate cover up of this information. We'll put it that way. And one of them was only referred to as Francis, and the other one was only referred to as Michael. And they both have their part to play in this story. But I'll let you go and sort of discover what specifically they were involved in on your own. But suffice it to say, the people who made this documentary, this Who is Richard Blee, which is available at secrecykills.com, they discovered the names of these two people, the actual names of these two people, and they were going to release this as part of their documentary, but then the CIA were threatening them to throw them in jail, basically, for releasing the names of these agents. So they spent a couple of weeks pondering what to do. Meanwhile, Sibel Edmonds was researching through her contacts and her sources at one of these people, Francis, and came up with a name. We've just confirmed that it is now, in fact, this Bukowski woman. And also the other person, the Michael, has also been confirmed as Michael and Casey. So the two names are now out there. They're now public, and there's no putting the genie back in that bottle. So the CIA, I guess, can try to threaten the producers of this documentary, but the names are out there now. And I really hope that people take this information and spread it around, because people are literally putting their lives on the line with this type of information. And here it is. And now we can start doing the real research and homework, trying to put the pieces together and connect who these people are and what their roles were exactly. But just huge, huge information. So I really hope the 9/11 Truth community has their eye on this and is going to help promote this story.
And we will, of course, provide the links to all the stories that we've cited so you can kind of put this story together for yourself. And I think we should also probably just throw in a link again to the complete 9/11 timeline from historycommons.org to make sense of what is, you know, the official conspiracy theory in a convoluted timeline, and referring to the alleged hijackers and conferences in Malaysia and all of those things you can follow on a great timeline basis.
Absolutely. And I just want to stress that this is an important story, even for the people who know that the hijackers weren't the key and the crux of this whole operation, and that's somewhat of a smokescreen. It's still important that this story get out there, because this story exposes the real lies that were going on in the cover-up. And it's like getting Al Capone for tax evasion instead of all the other stuff he was involved in. This is the foot in the door. This is the way to get into the heart of the cover-up, which is the way that we can start to blow open the conspiracy. So for people who want to dismiss this type of story, I think that you're doing a disservice to the information. This is a huge story, so I really hope people will get on this and will really get this information out in a big way.
It's also very telling that people involved in these kind of operations are always promoted as this case of Bukowski. So, James, moving to our second story this week as a way to kind of cover all of the economic collapse stories in one, if we can. We'll take it from Business Week. Yahoo apologizes for blocking emails on Wall Street protest. Yahoo Incorporated, operator of the most visited U.S. web portal, apologized for blocking emails about an anti-Wall Street protest that aims to occupy parts of Lower Manhattan for months. The protest, dubbed #OccupyWallStreet, or Take Wall Street, or Our Wall Street, aims to get President Barack Obama to establish a commission to end the influence money has over our representatives in Washington, according to the website of Adbusters, a group promoting the demonstration. Participants have complained in online videos that internet messages are being hindered. So a run-of-the-mill, you know, whoops, it's sorry, it was getting caught in our spam filters. But this Occupy Wall Street protest is now in its fifth day, beginning last Saturday, September 17th. James, I always kind of have mixed feelings about protest, perhaps as a dead paradigm. What do you think about Occupy Wall Street?
I understand your mixed feelings, and I share them to a certain extent. I think it is heartening to see people getting out there and putting their bodies on the line and putting it where it counts and showing that they're willing to stand up for this. I think that is important, and it's something that we should support generally. But having said that, I mean, here we have a case of the blowback effect, where Yahoo accidentally blocks this website, and now it's getting press attention because of that. So that's a good thing, and it gets the word out. But if you go to the website itself, I would just love to be able to read in a short, succinct statement what they are actually trying to do. So you read that little clip from the Adbusters website, but if you actually go to OccupyWallStreet.org, I couldn't tell. The only thing in there that says anything about what they are trying to do is to, quote, restore democracy. Well, yeah, great. I'm all on board with that. But what the hell does that mean? And what are they going to do? And when are they, what demands do they have? How will they be fulfilled? And how will they actually get what they're trying to go for? I mean, it's one thing to just go out there and you know, set up a camp and just camp out, but to actually accomplish something might be something different. So I don't know if this is the best use of this publicity, but having said that, at least I'm generally on board with people who are out there trying to do something. So I'm not going to besmirch that.
Absolutely. And I didn't want to imply necessarily that I was. I'd like to restore a constitutional republic, not so much democracy. But having said that, a couple of the most recent pieces of news that I can see on Occupy Wall Street right now: protesters vowed to camp near Wall Street indefinitely, and the arrests are mounting slowly but surely. Can't wear masks in public, especially not the Guy Fawkes anonymous masks. But a few other related economic notes looking around the states and around the world. From the Los Angeles Times, the Federal Reserve will revive Operation Twist in hopes of stimulating recovery. Accused of waging class warfare with his millionaire Buffett tax plan. That's posted to MediaMonarchy.com. Greek cabinet to impose new austerity steps, and 21 other signs that perhaps something big is about to happen in the financial world. And that is from BlacklistedNews.com. James, any take on any pieces there?
Just the fact that something big is absolutely bound to happen very soon in the financial world. So I think we all have to brace for it in whatever way we can.
Let's move to our third story. And like so many times, we return to food. And James, you and I noted that we haven't covered any foodworldorder.com related stories. So we will rectify that right now. As a Wisconsin judge says, raw milk is no fundamental right, And we take this from thecompletepatient.com. Those raw milk proponents advocating teach, teach, teach may want to enroll Wisconsin Judge Patrick J. Fiedler in their first class in the kindergarten section. In a response to a request from the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, the judge issued a clarification with the PDF link that we'll provide for you of his decision last week regarding his assessment of the constitutionality of food rights. The judge expanded on his original statement that such constitutional issues are wholly without merit. He explained that the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund arguments were extremely underdeveloped. As an example, he said the plaintiff's use of the Roe v. Wade abortion rights case as a precedent does, quote, not explain why a woman's right to have an abortion translates to a right to consume unpasteurized milk. This court is unwilling to declare that there is a fundamental right to consume the food of one's choice without first being presented with significantly more developed arguments on both sides of the issue, end quote. We can also get more from FTCLDF.org. James?
Well, here we go. Here's another case where a judge can rule whatever he wants and he can say whatever he wants, but it doesn't make it true. It doesn't make it so, and it doesn't mean we have to follow it. So again, they can rule that that slavery is okay, or they can rule that women aren't persons, or whatever else kind of ridiculous rulings they want to come out with. Eugenics laws are perfectly constitutional, but they will be overturned in time. And again, this is a case where there's natural law and then there's the law that they try to impose on us. And natural law says that if you're doing something and you want to put something in your body and it doesn't affect anyone else in any way, then you do it, and that's perfectly fine. So I have no doubt that in time that this will be rectified and corrected, and Wisconsin judges can say whatever they want, and I'm sure they will, with the dairy industry behind them trying to regulate what milk people can drink. But again, it's just not so.
I have other stories actually posted on foodworldorder.com concerning raw milk. E. coli concern prompts Washington raw milk recall. And I'd also, just in closing here, like to mention that I've been taking on some new writers and editors at some of the sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. So we've got folks now on Food World Order, so hopefully folks can look to see the output increase. And I would always implore that people just, subscribe to the feed so you can get all the stories automatically updated. James?
Excellent. Well, I always keep an eye on the Media Monarchy feed, and you do have a lot of stuff coming out lately, so that I hope people do have their eye on that. Also, Corbett Report, again, just tons of stuff coming out, and it tends to come out in clumps, so I do hope people are subscribed to the feeds. But I have an anthrax video coming out for Boiling Frogs Post this week, and an incredibly fascinating interview with Tom Secker for the Global Research Feature interview this week. So I really hope people will be staying tuned to that and keeping up with it. And also, I've been having some problems with my YouTube feed. Apparently a lot of subscribers aren't getting the videos. So if you are subscribed to YouTube and you are watching this and you didn't get it through your subscriber feed, please spread the word, and please check youtube.com/Corbett Report for new updates, because you might not be getting them.
And I also have, as James, you and I were mentioning off mic, Blip is not letting us upload any other supplementary file formats for video or audio. And I have a lot of those, and you can hit the link to my archive.org source of all the New World Next Week videos, audio, high quality, low quality. So, James, in closing, as this weekend, I will do my best to dodge the crashing satellite, but I will have, I believe, a new musical mixtape coming out through Media Monarchy, and of course, the regular jam-packed two-hour weekly podcast episode this Friday.
All right, looking forward to it. Thank you again for your time.
Thanks so much, man. Take care.